Hebrews chapter 11, as was read for us this morning, verse 8, it says, "By faith Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out to the place which he would receive as an inheritance, and he went out not knowing where he was going." This is probably one of the most familiar events in the Old Testament that we read about. Abraham, when he went out of Ur, of the Chaldees, it was the beginning of a journey. That really serves as a backdrop for a lot of what we see in the Old Testament and even into the New Testament. The Hebrew writer says that he was called to go. If you look back in Genesis chapter 12, Genesis chapter 12 doesn't use the word called. It just simply says that the Lord told him to go and get out of your country, from your family, from your father's house, and go to a land that I'll show you. But, you know, certainly the command for what he was going to do was a calling in a sense, in the biblical sense of the word. In Isaiah chapter 51, the Lord points Israel back to its roots, reminds them that Abraham was one that he called, and from that calling came a blessing. Isaiah chapter 51, verse 2, "Look to Abraham your father and to Sarah who bore you, for I called him alone and blessed him and increased him." The word called, we understand, it means to bid or to invite, to summon, or to command. And in the New Testament, it means more because it refers to us as the called, or those that are called out. You know, those who respond to God and respond in obedience. And so, you know, that's what we are today. We're the called out. We're saints, the Christians of what's described in the New Testament. So with that in mind, I want to connect what the Bible says about the calling of Abraham and even the other patriarchs that we read about in the Old Testament and compare that to us. And what does it really mean to be called? What did it mean that Abraham was called? And it's helpful to look at what we read in Hebrews. Hebrews chapter 11 and verse 9. Says that he was called to live as a sojourner. He was called to live in a tent. Hebrews chapter 11, verse 9, "By faith he dwelt in the land of promise as in a foreign country, dwelling in tents with Isaac and Jacob, the heirs with him of the same promise." And so this transition for Abraham and his family, it was more than just moving to a new place. And those of you that have moved from time to time, you know how disruptive that can be. It's not just he's just leaving a house and going to a new house. I mean, he left his house and he's going to a tent. And that's not something a lot of people would want to do. So his obedience is taking him to an entirely different type of life. And the point is that Abraham was called to be a pilgrim or a sojourner in a foreign land. I don't know how many of you have spent a good deal of time away from your home, but whenever we go away from home, whether it's to Atlanta or whether it's someplace further away, you know, there's a certain degree of uncomfortableness. There's a certain degree of not feeling like you're at home because you're not. And maybe sometimes it even feels a little dangerous or disruptive. But what God did here with Abraham, he promised him that I'm going to give you something that's worthwhile. I'm going to give you and your descendants the land in which you are a stranger, but you know, you're going to receive all the land of Canaan. And so he was called to live in a tent. Well, it just helps us to know what is a pilgrim. And what comes to mind when you think of a pilgrim? Well, you probably think, like many people, they think about the Mayflower at Plymouth Rock. They may think about, you know, Thanksgiving decorations. I can remember a lot of times we drew the outline around our hand and made the little turkey out of that at Thanksgiving. When you think about a pilgrim, you may think about a belt buckle hat. Maybe you think about John Wayne. Same pilgrim. But the word that's translated as sojourner or pilgrim, it means an alien alongside, or a resident foreigner. A resident foreigner. It denotes one that's living in a place that's not his home. You know, we have one among us that's doing that very thing. You know, Lily, she's at Montevallo. She's living in a place that's not her home. She's a Montevallo pilgrim, I guess. And so, one who is not living in a place that's not their home, among people that are not their people. And Peter talks about this in 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 11, when he talks about us as being strangers and pilgrims. And so this points to the fact that one is not passing through, but this is one who's taken up residence in a land that's not theirs, taken up residence in a land of foreigners. And he's not settled in as to be a citizen or to have a permanent house, but this is Abraham who's living in a tent. And so that helps us understand what it is to be a pilgrim. This morning, the first song that Jason led, Heaven Holds All to Me, it starts out by talking about, there is a country to which I am going. Heaven holds all to me. And so that's the perspective that we have as pilgrims. What is the perspective that a pilgrim should have? How does the Bible describe the outlook of the pilgrim? Well, it's obvious though it is that we are looking for another place, that we are headed for a different home. So what are some of the attributes of that life? Well, as we've already kind of alluded to, there's vulnerability in the life of a pilgrim. When you notice the state of Abraham's life, and when he goes and does this, it not only is including him, it's including his descendants, it includes his son, his grandchildren. It's a whole new way of life, not just for him, but for everybody that follows behind him. And there were times when Abraham and his descendants were very vulnerable. Why? Because they were in an area that didn't belong to them. It wasn't their land. They were not permanent residents. But God protected them. But as I already said, sometimes when we go to a place that's not our own, is not our home, depending on how dangerous that place is, it may be something that makes us feel very vulnerable. And certainly there's areas that sometimes people would just rather avoid because they know that, especially in that place, I don't feel protected. There's been times in the Atlanta area where I've gotten off at the wrong exit and hope that I can live long enough to find my way off of this exit and back to the interstate. And so sometimes we feel vulnerable. And Abraham is in a pilgrimage that sometimes makes him and his family vulnerable. But that's the life of a pilgrim, and God protected them in this condition. He did not want them to seek protection by just settling down and seeking to be a permanent resident. But his life was a journey of faith. And so where do I find my protection? Is my protection in my constitutional rights as an American? Well, that's not where we should put our trust. Abraham's trust was in the Lord, and our trust should be in the unwavering promises of God, just as Abraham's was. Trust in the unwavering promises of God. That's where we find our protection. Hebrews chapter 11, verse 13, tells us when Abraham's family came to grips with the reality of being a sojourner, the Hebrew writer describes it in this way, that it was all worth it. Hebrews 11:13, these all died in faith, not having received the promise, but having seen them afar off, were assured of them, embraced them, and confessed that they were strangers and pilgrims on the earth. So living as a pilgrim means to embrace the promises of God as your way of life. We can see that throughout the life of Abraham. And we can see why so many of those that came after him looked to him as an example. I don't think sometimes we appreciate how difficult that must have been for Abraham. And how tempting it must have been at times. Well, here's a good place. Let's just settle down here. But he didn't do that. And he was looking towards something that he wasn't going to see. He could see the things afar off, but we know that the ultimate promise of what was promised to him came to his descendants. So what does that mean to us? We're seeking after something that we don't see. We know that it's in the future. But we accept the pilgrimage. We accept the calling. And we live accordingly. And then we have to not be ashamed to say that we're not really at home. That we are not at home here. And what we do may sometimes be suffering. We must be willing to suffer as an exile, as a pilgrim. Everything about us should testify to the fact that we are aware that this is temporary. Everything around us is temporary. Is that the way that we behave? Or do we behave like, I have to have everything in this world? And that this world is what it's all about. Also, what we see regarding the pilgrim is that they're nonconformists. And what I mean is that the pilgrim is not going to conform to the world. The pilgrim demands that we live in the world without becoming like it. And that's difficult to do. Paul tells us that in Romans chapter 12, that we are not to be conformed to this world, but rather we are to be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. And so Paul is saying that there's black and white. There's a clear distinction between those that are in the world and those that want to conform to the world and those that do not. 2 Corinthians chapter 6, Paul also draws a line between the world and those that are not of the world. In 2 Corinthians chapter 6, verse 14, he says, "Do not be unequally yoked together with unbelievers. For what fellowship has righteousness with lawlessness? And what communion has light with darkness?" Paul's saying that there's light and dark. There's black and white. There's the sheep and the goats. Don't be conformed to the world. You are not of the world. I had a friend in college who was Christian, and he really focused in on this point in his life, and he used to tell people, you know, "I'm not of this world," and they thought he was crazy because they thought he was saying that he was from outer space or something. But that's not what he was saying. He recognized that I'm not of this world. I am a pilgrim. I'm a sojourner. That means I am traveling. I haven't reached my destination yet. And those that behave in that way will be seen as not conforming, because they're different from the world. They are not conformed to the world, as Paul said. Paul tells us that Jesus gave Himself for our sins that He might deliver us from this present evil age according to the will of our God and Father. Galatians chapter 1. So are we delivered from the world, or do we want to be delivered from the world? I'm convinced that a lot of people really, if they're honest with themselves, really don't care about being delivered from the world. They would like to have it all. They'd like to live as though this world is all that there is, and then somehow make it into heaven when this life is over. But the possessions and the glory of this world, you know, threaten us all the time on every level. They attack what is supposed to be the nature of our calling, which is to be a sojourner, which is to be a pilgrim, and it takes our eyes off of the journey. You know, sometimes we use
We use the term worldliness. You know, what comes to your mind when you've probably heard preachers for decades use that term, talk about worldliness? Well, what does it mean to be worldly? What does it mean to be worldly minded? I can tell you what I usually would think about. If my dad or somebody else was talking about those that are worldly, you're thinking about those that curse and those that drink, those that are involved in sexual immorality, those that are involved with greed and selfishness and covetousness. And so a lot of times when we think about worldliness, we think about items, we think about things, we think about sins, specific things that might trip us up. But you know, it might be better to think about worldliness as an attitude. Because the wrong attitude toward the world is really going to foster all of those other things anyway. If our attitude is not one of being a pilgrim, if our attitude is not one of looking toward the next life, then that's where all of those symptoms of worldliness will seep into our life. It's an attitude. It's a desire to be attached to the things of this world. It's a desire not to be different. It's a desire to want to do something that's sinful or selfish. And certainly it matters whether or not you do more than desire. If you actually desire it and then you fall into that trap and actually do those things. But you know, just having that desire to be like the world is a problem. When you want the praise of men, when you want to conform to the way other people are living around you, John MacArthur said it this way. He said, worldliness is not so much what we do as what we want to do. It is not determined so much by what our actions are as by where our heart is. Some people do not commit certain sins only because they are afraid of the consequences. Others because of what people will think. Others from a sense of self-righteous satisfaction in resisting, all the while having a strong desire for these sins. It is the desire for sin that is the root of worldliness and from which the believer is to be separated. I certainly agree with that having the desire for the world is a big problem. And there are those that will resist the world for different reasons because they want to fit in with their family. They don't want to be disfellowshipped from the church. They want others to respect them. But you know, the person that longs to be like the world and has the attitude that that's what I want really has a miserable, miserable existence. If they're trying to walk the tightrope between the world and a life of faith, it's not compatible. 1 John chapter 2, verse 15, John says that we cannot love the world nor the things of the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. To defeat worldliness is to defeat the love of the world. We need to think about worldliness in that way. Certainly, worldliness does manifest itself in all kinds of areas and all kinds of sins that we would term as being a symptom of a person that is worldly. But being worldly is about loving the world. And to defeat it, we have to grow spiritually to the point that we don't love it, that we don't desire it. And then the things of the world lose their attraction. And Peter describes it in 1 Peter chapter 2 as a spiritual war, and it characterizes the life of the pilgrim. 1 Peter chapter 2, verses 11 and 12. Beloved, I beg you, as sojourners and pilgrims, abstain from fleshly lusts which war against the soul, having your conduct honorable among the Gentiles. To abstain, we know, means to avoid. It's to keep yourself back from something. To keep yourself separate. And so Peter is telling the first century church that you cannot maintain purity. You cannot maintain holiness. You cannot be separate if you are going to give in to these fleshly lusts which war against the soul. And again, he tells them, he reminds them that you are strangers, you are sojourners, you are pilgrims. They needed to be reminded of that. And I think we need to be reminded all the time of that ourselves. Especially when we live in a land of plenty, and most of us have plenty. We're not hurting too bad, even though there's things around us that we don't like. There's things going on politically and socially that we don't like. But other than that, we still pretty much have it pretty good. Do we really see ourselves as a pilgrim and sojourner, not of this world? Abraham is also one that would have to have patience to go through what he did and to do what he did. As one like Abraham that's transitioning to another place, or being a transient in a foreign land, Abraham certainly had to be patient for God to deliver on his promise. We can certainly see that in the promise of his son and in the things that transpired with that. So Abraham, he lived on the land. But think about this, he didn't possess any of it. Except for the small plot where he buried his wife. And so I imagine it must have been very tempting for Abraham and his sons just to give up on the promise. And when they found a nice place, we're just going to declare our homesteading rights right here and take over this area. But Abraham, his ability to wait was founded on how sure he was about what God had promised him. His eyes were on the city whose architect and builder is God. That's what the Hebrew writer said. So only those who are truly heavenly minded will continue to obey God. And will continue to walk by faith, even when it becomes hard, it becomes difficult. Do people today share that hope with others? Are they willing to tell others that I am a pilgrim, I'm a sojourner, I believe in heaven. I believe that there is a future for me after this life. That it's not just something that is a myth or a story. It's not just something that people talk about because it makes them feel better when somebody dies. Heaven is where I'm going. It is the destination of the pilgrim. I don't hear too many people talk like that. But it's something that should be motivating us to go on. It motivated Abraham to go on and to ignore the attractions of the world because he believed in God's promise. And if we believe in God's promise, it motivates us to go on and to not settle down here. Colossians chapter 3, verse 2. To set your mind on things above, not on things on the earth. For you died, and your life is hidden with Christ in God. When Christ, who is our life, appears, then you will also appear with Him in glory. Okay, that talks about the hope. That talks about setting your mind on things above. And so what do you do about that? Well, he goes on and says, therefore, put to death your members which are on the earth. Because of what is ahead of you, because of what God has promised, because of what Christ has done for you, then that dictates a change. It dictates a mindset that you should have, which you put to death your worldliness. You put to death your members which are on the earth, fornication, uncleanness, passion, evil desire, and covetousness, which is idolatry. Because of these things, the wrath of God is coming upon the sons of disobedience. One writer said, Christians who make a difference in the world are the ones who think more of the next world. And that's true. Christians who make a difference in the world are the ones who think more of the next world. In fact, the only Christians that are going to make a difference in this world are the ones that are focused on the next world. That is our entire motivation. And so this world is not our home. Our purpose here is not to form some kind of secluded colony and that we're going to live in isolation from the rest of society. It's not to shut ourselves up in a building somewhere and broadcast to people outside the building and preach against the world that's outside. And we can be in the world and still not of the world. That's what we are. We're in the world but not of the world. And if we're not in the world, then we don't have the ability to shine as lights to the world. And we're called to do that. We're called to shine as lights, to be as salt, to be that city on the hill that cannot be hidden. But the only way to do that is to be something different, to stand out. You'll stand out when you're light, when you're surrounded by darkness. So what is the perspective of the pilgrim? Brendan and I watched one of the most stupid movies I've ever seen the other day called Rocket Man. And don't go look for it. It was a comedy about this guy that ended up going up into space, and he was like the most unqualified person that should go. And so if you ever don't have anything better to do, which I can't imagine you ever would, go look for that movie. But he looked out the window of the craft and he saw the earth. And he had a different perspective of the earth as he was getting away from it. And any astronaut would feel the same way, you know. Because how many people have actually had that perspective? Yes, we've all seen pictures of what the earth looks like from outer space. What's the perspective of the pilgrim? It really should be looking down, you know, a view from above, looking down, because this is all just something that's temporary. And what I mean by that is we need to see the world as God sees it. We need to understand that this is not all that there is. And all we can do is try to see the world the way that God sees it, because He tells us the way that we should perceive it. Perception is a funny thing. And whenever I go back to places where I grew up, go see my old elementary school or go see the house that we lived in when I was kindergarten age, that house is so tiny, that school is so small, this doesn't look anything like I remembered. But that was my perspective then. I was small and all that stuff seemed really, really big. See the world as God sees it, and to realize the world is not all that there is. It's a perspective that we need to have. But also the perspective of the pilgrim is not just looking down, but it's looking up, you know, to God. Because we need to see the world as God sees it, but we also need to see God for who He is. So we need to have the right perspective on the world, and we need to have the right perspective on God. In 1 Chronicles chapter 28, David is directing the preparation for the building of the temple in Jerusalem. And of course, he's helping his son because, you know, God gave Solomon that responsibility. But David's helping out here with plans for the temple and charging him to be obedient to all of God's commandments. And so David personally gave his gold and silver for the building, and he is urging Israel to do the same thing, to follow his lead. And they do. They all give generously. And what follows here is where David is overwhelmed in praise. 1 Chronicles chapter 29, verse 10. Therefore, David blessed the Lord before all the assembly, and David said, "Blessed are you, Lord God of Israel, our Father forever and ever. Yours, O Lord, is the greatness, the power, and the glory, the victory and the majesty, for all that is in heaven and earth is yours. Yours is the kingdom, O Lord, and you are exalted as head over all. Both riches and honor come from you, and you reign over all. In your hand is power and might. In your hand it is to make great and to give strength to all. Now, therefore, our God, we thank you and praise your glorious name. But who am I and who are my people that we should be able to offer so willingly as this? For all things have come from you, and of your own we have given you. For we are aliens and pilgrims before you, as were all our fathers. Our days on earth are as a shadow and without hope. O Lord our God, all this abundance that we have prepared to build you a house for your holy name is from your hand and is all your own." David had a way with words, and he certainly outdid himself here. And this is beautiful. It's probably one of the highlights of everything that David said or wrote. Because he gets it. He gets who God is. He's understanding of what God owns, which is everything. And he's very mindful of his place in all of that. And he says, "But who am I and who are my people?" So everything that we've done, he could have taken great pride and said, I gave all of my gold, and I encouraged everyone, look what we did for you. And praise the people for everything that they did in having this to come to pass. But you don't see any of that. You see total humbleness and humility and recognition. But you also see, he says, that we are aliens and pilgrims before you, as were all of our fathers. Our days on earth are as a shadow and without hope. Lord, our God, all this abundance that we have prepared to build you a house for your holy name is from your hand and it is all your own. So David recognizes that everything that he's done and all that has been done before him, that they are pilgrims and sojourners, and our life on earth is but a shadow. In other words, it's going to go away so quickly. Just as was discussed in our class this morning, that the mist in the morning, the fog in the morning, is so quickly burned off. And that's the way our life is. It's like a mist. So the secret to living as pilgrims on the earth is to understand who God is, that He is the source of all that we have, and our days are just a shadow. And He takes care of us, but if he doesn't take care of us, we are without hope. But He has provided for us and will provide. So let's not get tied up with this world. Let's remember the world that is to come. And remember that God has always provided for those that recognize that they are pilgrims and sojourners looking for that next land. We can help you in any way to prepare for that life that is to come. We invite you to come while we stand together and sing.